Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. This is Tim Grady. I'm your host, and I have my co-host with me today, Lou Wise. Lou is traveling. He's not in the studio, but Lou, how's your day going?
My day's going great, and the weather's a lot better than it is in the New York, New Jersey area. South Beach is having a wonderful 80 degree, no humidity, slight breeze, and some beautiful women.
Okay, so I'm going to leave the studio now. I'm headed to South Beach. You'll have to carry on from here.
All righty. The beautiful woman, by the way, is my wife.
Yeah. There's a safe call.
It's a safe comment.
Lou, what's the update on the port situation in Los Angeles? I don't know that it's gotten any better, but what have you heard?
Well, I guess if it hasn't gotten worse, that's probably good news. It's sort of gotten worse in that they're not solving anything. They've got one or two of the issues, quote unquote, on the road to resolution. But this is not going well. And, in looking at the numbers, our guest Brad Holcomb will probably be talking about that. I'd be surprised that our numbers aren't being affected yet by the port issue. I know that our metals company, All Metals and Forge Group, were making alternate plans in terms of shipping our goods from instead of shipping into California, we're going to be shipping our goods into New York. We're tired of these 6-7 months of living on the edge of our chair. So the port issue is not progressed particularly well. So that being said, referring back to our show of last week, our postscript, we had Cliff Waldman from MAPI on our show, and he was talking about basically this topic, Made in America versus Made in America. Where the supply chain is changing so rapidly that it's hard to tell if something's made in America because so many of the components of products are not made in America. So is it made in America or is it made elsewhere? You can tune into that show and hear Cliff. He's a brilliant guy, been on the show multiple times, and MAPI is really professional in the level of information that they put out on a global basis. And I recommend that anyone who wants to hear what's going on globally, tune in to Cliff Waldman. Tim?
And we have another professional on our show today from ISM, the Institute of Supply Management. We're always glad to have Brad Holcomb with us, who's the chair of the ISM's Manufacturing Business Survey Committee, and he gives us the latest manufacturing report on business, but he does more than what the soundbite gives you on the nightly news, just the number and either it's up or down. And as we've talked to Brad before, it's never really down, it just rolls up differently. So Brad, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here, and great to have an opportunity to talk about the report. You made a point of the headlines that people hear and see. There's a lot more to the story, and we'll try to flesh that out for the audience today.
Great. Why don't you give them the synopsis of the report, and let's kind of roll right through it, because there's a lot of great information this month.
Great. So the PMI itself is at 53.5, and again, anything above 50 represents growth in the manufacturing sector, which is comprised of 18 different industries that we follow. So at 53.5, again, growing. It's growing slower than last month. It was down in terms of a rate of growth by 1.6 percentage points from December's number of 55.1, but it's growing for 20 consecutive months. Something else, just by way of background and setting the table here, that goes on in January each year is we go back and we re-seasonalize those subcomponents of the PMI, which statistically warrant seasonalization, to take the effects of short months and holidays and normal weather patterns, et cetera, such that each month, as a result, looks like any other month. And so that has just taken place. And when I refer, for example, to December's PMI of 55.1, that is a seasonally adjusted number, which previously was 55.5. In any case, the PMI is growing. So manufacturing is growing. It's not growing quite as quickly as it was last month, but nevertheless growing. All of the five subcomponents of the PMI are above 50 as well. And that's good news. So it's a nicely balanced report in that sense. Let me tick off these five sub-indexes in order and talk a little bit about them.
Okay.
New orders is something that we always really focus on. It sort of drives this whole system, if you will. It is at 52.9, again, growing. But it's growing quite a bit slower than last month by 4.9 percentage points. But it has also been growing, like the PMI, for 20 consecutive months. And I'll come back to more detail on new orders in a moment. Production is the second index feeding into the PMI, is at 56.5, nicely above the midpoint of the 50s. But it is down 1.2 percentage points from last month, nevertheless growing and growing for the 11th consecutive month. Employment is another one that many people focus on, as we all do and as we should. It's at 54.1, a respectable number, but down 1.9 percentage points from last month. But employment growing for the 19th consecutive months. And I'll pause on employment to refer to another number in the report under the employment section, and that is we do correlate our employment figures with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, similar sequence and series on manufacturing employment. And we find that anything above 50.6 generally translates into higher numbers later in the week. And I think it's Friday that the Bureau of Labor Statistics reveals their manufacturing employment numbers. So we're well above the 50.6 that I mentioned and should generally translate into good numbers later in the week. The fourth sub-index, supplier deliveries, these are deliveries of raw materials and commodities to the receiving end of manufacturing. It's at 52.9. It suggests that deliveries are slow and slowing, not quite as much as last month by 5.7 percentage points, but anything above 50 suggests that suppliers are having a difficult time sort of keeping up with the demand for raw materials and commodities from manufacturing. That's why anything above 50 is really a good thing, because it reflects tightness in the supply chain. And that has been the case for 20 consecutive months. And then finally, inventories of raw materials is at 51.0. That's 5.5 percentage points, kind of recovering from the low 45.5 that we saw in December. But it is growing now from what was contracting. And so inventories are back in a very nice place, in anticipation of a continuation of orders. And so what we've just talked about are the five sub-indexes and the PMI itself, all nicely above 50, which is where we like things, but they are down from last month, except for inventories, which is up in terms of a rate of growth. And a lot of the mainstream press focus on these percentage points down from last month and really don't emphasize the better point that the numbers are well above 50 and growing. So let's always look at the numbers first and appreciate them. They are growing, not just as fast as last month.
Well, Brad, we try not to focus on what bleeds leads, and so we can appreciate what you're saying, and you're right. The mainstream media always shows, oh, my God, it went down. We're heading to the edge of the cliff. That being said, you have your own personal little formula that you've told us a couple of times. I'd like you to share that with our listeners, which I find actually quite useful in my business, and that's having to do with, it's new orders and inventory formula?
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
You want to explain that to us?
It's sort of an off-the-page combination of indexes that I find interesting and meaningful, and that is to subtract new orders, which is 52.9, or subtract inventories, which is 51, from new orders, 52.9. That turns out to be 1.9 percentage points. It's positive, but I like a number which is 5 or greater, and it's been 5 or greater by quite a bit the last 3 months. It's come down to 1.9, still positive, but it suggests that, you know, things are kind of interesting right now, and I'll talk more about that. But let me talk a little bit more about new orders, and that is on the detail page. Your audience will notice that 10 of the 18 industries that we follow are reporting a growth in new orders, and 4 are reporting a decline in new orders, which means that 4 are staying even from last month. So 14 of the 18 are either reporting growth in new orders or level from last month, which was a pretty good month. Now, among those that are reporting a decline is petroleum and coal products, which embraces all of the oil, natural gas, and in general the energy sector, which is about 10% of total manufacturing GDP. And so they're reporting orders are down, they're ordering less equipment, fewer supplies, et cetera, as they kind of hunker down around the new oil price situation. And, we've heard tons about that, of course. But nevertheless, those are the details which I think are very meaningful as we try to appreciate what this entire report means. I'd also like to provide a little longer-term perspective on this PMI of 53.5 in January. If you go back to 2012, 2013, 2014, those January PMI numbers were all lower than the current 53.5, and the subsequent February's for those years was always higher than those respective January's. So just looking at the historical perspective and everything else in this report, I think we are well positioned to see a higher number in February and going forward. Another way that we can sort of you know, judge that or glean some insights into sort of where we're going from here is by looking at the respondents, what I call verbatim quotes or comments. And the preponderance of comments indicate very strong customer demand. We have the first one from the Food, Beverage, and Tobacco Group. Strong customer demand for our products continues to grow. From the transportation equipment, consumer demand remains strong for automotive, and this particular company is seeking alternatives to maximize production with existing production capacity. So they're probably looking at other shifts, more overtime, etc. So again, strong demand from the automotive area. Computer and electronic products. Sales have stayed very strong even with the dip in oil prices. Finally, there's one from Primary Metals, which is near and dear to our hosts' hearts. Business in 2015 has started off on a fast pace, very busy, from Primary Metals. So that's reflective of the comments, and the importance of those comments is that it's more forward-looking on the part of our panel or our professionals out in 350 or so different companies. They're looking at their order books, which, as you all know, goes out, you know, three, four months, sometimes 6 months, sometimes even longer. So they're reflecting on the order books that they have in hand when they talk about these comments and give us a flavor for things to come. So I think, again, we're well positioned. We've got a good start for the new year, and we can anticipate, that we're well positioned for growth as we go forward.
Brad, I'll just throw in my two cents worth about the near and dear to my heart, and that's the Primary Metals. And you're right, we're finding very strong, hitting the ground running in January, which was actually just a continuation of what we experienced in December. And we hear from our friendly competitor, Forge facilities around the country. They're all pretty busy, and with lots of potential business coming from the comments of their customers as well as my customers, that there's a lot of good things in the garden that are going to be popping over the next 60, 90 days. So I throw that at you to support the point that you were making.
Great, great. Now let me touch on some other comments here. I've highlighted three concerning the West Coast port dock slowdown situation. And it is more than annoying. It's causing real disruption in terms of imports and exports, and having a negative impact on certain inventories as well. And it's causing manufacturing, as you mentioned earlier, to do some workarounds, have goods coming and going from other ports, doing air shipments, which costs more, etc. So we're really hoping that this gets resolved in the near future. Our three comments regarding this problem come from wood products, chemical products, and the machinery industries, three of our 18 industries. The first one from wood products, in combination with the Chinese New Year, West Coast port dock slowdown, coupled with railroad embargo, all creating logistical challenges and increased backlog of orders. From the chemical products industry, dock problems in California continue to delay shipments out of the West Coast. And then finally, from paper products, West Coast port slowdown is getting serious. The mill has 40-plus days of production at the ports and various warehouses. So we've got inventories of finished goods piling up there. Not a good situation, again, causing us to do workarounds.
Where do you think that's going to start to have an impact on GDP and reflected into PMI?
Yeah, I can't really tease that out or predict. Just hope like everyone else that it gets resolved. I do feel that it has impacted inventories to some degree, and certainly squeezing margins in terms of having to do air shipments of raw materials and parts from overseas, seeking out new ports, et cetera. Okay.
Well,
so
Brad,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Brad, I imagine in your daily activities in assembling this report that you have occasion to talk to an economist here or there. What are they hearing from corporate America, and what are they hearing from the American consumer in terms of confidence?
I think consumer confidence, new subject from what we were discussing. Everything I hear is that consumer confidence right now is solid. And one of the key economists that I pay a lot of attention to is Brian Westbury. And he talks about that the fundamentals are still strong in place. Consumers, drive this bus, and their confidence is strong. So, you'll hear from the mainline news bureaus, the negatives, right, and the gloom and doom. I mean, I think that's what they thrive on. That's what, sells papers, to use an old expression, et cetera. But there's a lot more to the story, and that's what we try to do on this show as well. But still, the mainstream media, for example, is not really covering the West Coast port situation because it's not interesting to them or they don't want to rock the boat. I really don't know. So again, on a number of fronts, you have to look deeper and appreciate things for the way they really are, as opposed to just looking for the negatives. Look for the positives and try and find a balanced point of view.
Well, by the way, Brad, just to clear up any confusion that our listeners might have, in the report, the 53.5 is referred to as the PMI, which is what it was called some years ago. Does the mainstream media still call it PMI or the ISM number? Maybe you could explain the transition from PMI if somebody's made it.
Yes, the mainstream media uses simply the initials PMI, and that's become really the trademarked logo, if you will. And ISM, the Institute for Supply Management, owns the copyright, the registration mark for PMI. It used to be called, and this is where the initials come from, the Purchasing Managers Index. That is no longer a part of the nomenclature. It's simply PMI. The initial word purchasing or purchasing manager, the profession has gone so far beyond that to procurement and supply management that purchasing is too restrictive at this point. So once again, it's simply PMI, and everybody that I know has rallied around that.
Okay, and why don't we let you wrap up with the other five sections of your report that are always quite revealing.
Yes, and I'd like to do a couple of them quickly. Imports and exports. Imports of raw materials, very strong at 55.5, up a half. And then exports is down to 49.5, contracting for the first time in 20 or 25 months. And I think that's a reflection of two things. I think primarily the stronger dollar makes our finished goods more expensive, but I think there's plenty of optimism that that'll pop back up as the rest of the world gets used to higher prices for our goods. And then I'd like to comment on the prices of raw materials is at 35, down another 3.5 points from last month. Very much specifically, that story is about the oil complex coming down, and we see in our list of commodities down in price, you know, all of those related commodities, gasoline, diesel, fuel oil, et cetera, but also the resins, which have oil inside them, plastic resins of various kinds, and also metals like stainless steel, steel, nickel, copper, aluminum. Those take a lot of energy to produce. Those are all down in price now for 2 to 3 months consecutively.
Okay. Now, how about backlog of orders? That seems to have dropped.
Yeah, backlog is at 46. So the backlog is contracting. We really don't like to see that to this degree. It's at 46. That means production, the level of production and capacity and related employment in January was more capable in terms of just producing against new orders, so they ate into the backlog of orders as well. And so, as always, we look forward to more and more new orders, for the backlog to come up, for production to stay strong, for employment to be moving in that direction as well. And again, let's stay tuned for next month. I think we're well positioned for growth. The fundamentals are in place. The forward-looking comments suggest a strong economy with new orders on the horizon.
Well, Brad, we'll look forward to your comments next month. We're glad to have you back on the show. We've appreciated having you on today. I understand you have another meeting you have to run out to, so you won't be joining us for the second half of the show. But thank you for being with us, Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
And bye. I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back with Manufacturing Talk Radio in just a few moments and introduce our other guests.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit americancrane.com. That's americancrane.com or 877-877-6778.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Radio. I am here now with Linda Regano, who is the Executive Director of Media Relations of ThomasNet, and ML Peck, who's Senior Vice President of Program and Product Development at ISM. And Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be back again.
And ML, glad to have you back on the show with us.
Thank you.
Hello, ladies. This is Lou. How you doing, Linda? And ML?
Hi.
Hi, Lou.
Nice to hear your voice, Lou. Happy to be back.
Nice having you back again.
Well, I want to kind of shift the conversation from the manufacturing index numbers to a kind of a truly remarkable number, and that is the news from the Census Bureau. They're now projecting that the millennial population in the U.S. is surpassing the number of baby boomers. So finally, the focus can shift to the young and up-and-coming stars, and that's what ML Peck and Linda Regano are going to talk about today, are the 30 under 30 rising stars in the supply chain. this has been a program that I will let our guests talk about and how they came up with it. Let me just kind of jump into this with you all. Linda, why did we hold – well, let me do this first. Linda, give us a quick update on Thomas Netton, who you folks are and how you got involved in 30 Under 30.
Sure, happy to. You know, we both our organizations, Thomasnet and ISM, have a lot of synergies. We go back a long way, so we have a 100-year history with each other. And it was actually a Thomas Register salesman who founded the very first chapter of ISM in New York City. And that really became the springboard to the ISM National. But Thomasnet.com is, you know, we're all about the procurement process, sourcing and procurement. We're buyers' leading free resource for supplier discovery and product sourcing. And ISM is an organization that, you know, leads the way for all procurement, not procurement, but all supply chain through its standards of excellence, their research, promotional activities. So it's, you know, a lot of synergies, and we really have a similar goal, which is to advance the purchasing profession, you know, the purchasing and supply chain profession.
And ML, how did Thomasnet and ISM come together to come up with the 30 Under 30 program?
Well, we came together because, as Linda said, we share a common goal, which is to advance the supply chain management profession. You know, and we talked about some of the different ways that Thomasnet does this through the leading free resource for supplier discovery and product sourcing, and ISM does this through, as Linda said, professional standards, research, promotional activities. And we saw a need to attract more millennials to the field. As you said, millennials are now surpassing baby boomers in numbers, in sheer numbers.
And Linda, Why hold the competition? What's going on out in the marketplace to have a competition?
Okay, well, I mean, a couple of things. You know, supply chain is, you know, very similar to manufacturing. It's a, you know, it's an audience that is dominated by baby boomers, and you know, our job is to, you know, obviously promote the industry for both of us, but we wanted to really. We're in a very strong effort to try and get more millennials interested in the business. And it's very important, I think, you know, as baby boomers are starting to retire, you know, and move on, we need to fill that pipeline of talent. And that's really critical to both, you know, manufacturing, but very much in supply chain. And so we wanted to be able to promote the profession. And we thought, you know, what better way? We all got together. I mean, this is the kind of thing which, you know, came out of a, you know, you were at a conference together and we're chit-chatting and we're saying, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had some kind of a program where we could highlight all these young people that are doing cool things? And ML has a great quote, which, ML, I'm going to steal your thunder here, but, you know, how do we inject the cool factor into supply chain? And that we said, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we did a program like 30 Under 30? Because, and we deliberately picked 30 Under 30 because it has a lot of name recognition. Forbes and Fortune and Cranes and Inc., they all do 30 Under 30 programs to honor and highlight and promote young people doing great things. So we said, let's do a competition, you know, and see what happens. And so we, you know, we got together. We did, you know, there was a lot of effort and energy that went into it. But we kicked it off in last year at ISM's May conference, and we held the competition, not competition, but the contest from May through July 30th. And we invited people throughout the country to nominate people that were 30 years or under as of this past December, and to, you know, tell us about people that were doing creative things, that were demonstrating leadership and innovativeness, and, you know, people that were really just, you know, going over and above, you know, and beyond, and to demonstrate that. And we were blown away, you know, because at first when we did this, we just, you know, we kind of, you know, held back and said, oh, gosh, I hope we get enough nominations. And I'll remember when we hit 30, we just kind of went, oh, you know.
I do.
How many did you have?
We got a couple of hundred. We got 225 nominations.
Excellent.
And it was awesome. Yes, yes.
Now, for our listeners, by the way, we've been following this story quite a while, and let me apologize. I did something in radio and television that's called burying the lead. This is the 30 Under 30 Rising Supply Chain Stars program that Thomas Nett and ISM have put together, and here's the lead, folks. Just last Wednesday, Thomas Nett and ISM announced the names of the 30 under 30 professionals that are making their mark on the purchasing and supply chain management industry, including one megastar among them. So that's really what we're here to delve into with ML and Linda. And ML, why are supply chain careers such a good choice for millennials right now?
Well, there's several reasons. The supply chain industry offers some of the top paying positions right out of school. So every year ISM does a salary survey, and last year's salary survey showed that the average pay for a professional with up to 4 years on the job is $72,119 a year, which is on par with engineering. But I think more importantly, supply chain management careers dovetail with millennials' value systems. These professionals are socially conscious and want to make a difference in their organization and their communities. In fact, our rising stars say that their positions empower them to improve access to vital products and services, from medicines to clean energy, while contributing to sustainability goals. And they also are able to make a big financial impact. They're helping their organizations work more effectively, efficiently, and strategically through their supply chains. And collectively, this group of 30 are saving their companies hundreds of millions of dollars. It's very, very inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did the nominating?
So the nominations were submitted by their peers in the field, usually their bosses or mentors. And you guys helped us to broadcast the word, along with other outlets focused on the manufacturing and purchasing profession. So thank you. That's why we were able to get the response that we did.
Yes.
Well, you're welcome. We had fun promoting it, and it's been a really kind of a dynamic program. We have gone through some of the bios of the winners, if you will, including the megastar, and we're going to have some of those on next week on our show to talk about more of an in-depth look at the 30 Under 30 program and what these millennials are doing.
Oh, great.
Linda, who made the selections? You know, it can't be easy going through 225 applications and trying to boil it down to 30 and then get a megastar.
No, it was not easy at all. In fact, we had, you know, it was a joint, choosing the winners was really a joint collaboration between ISM and Thomas Nett. So Thomas Nett narrowed down the first round, and then both organizations, worked to make that final decision on who that megastar was going to be. But it was a panel of judges here, some people in-house, some people outside.
And, you know, we talked about the 30 under 30 megastar. What is a megastar? Define that for our audience.
ML, you want to take that one?
Sure. So we define the megastar as, just the ultimate supply chain rock star. And that was so difficult to choose. As as you've seen and you read the bios of those 30, they are all, again, inspiring and innovative, and what they're bringing to their – and the value that they bring to their companies is wonderful. But our main winner is Katie Conrad Maynor. She's 29 and a category manager at Shell Oil. She's currently on special assignment in London. And what really drew us in about her was her dedication to optimizing relationships within the supply chain in order to improve processes and really drive results within an organization. She also, took an initiative and was instrumental with the ISM Houston affiliate in creating the first emerging professionals group, which built a really huge, impressive network. And we just love young professionals that take this initiative to connect with others in the profession.
Yeah.
You know, I have to share with you, I'm really impressed with reading the bios of these 30 individuals. I know that there's a baby boomer consensus floating around out there that the millennials have no work ethic, and that is not what you read when you read the bios of these 30 individuals. They're not necessarily flying a desk in a cubicle, but they're working all the time. So in general,
Hello?
We're having difficulty. Please hold a moment.
Okay, sure.
We're having difficulty. Please hold a moment. I think that we've lost Tim. Our guest still there?
Yeah,
we are
still here.
Okay, so I will fill in until Tim is back online. And we were talking about Catherine Conrad and the superstar, the megastar, sorry, the megastar, and what she does. And I also read all of the bios that Tim was talking about a few moments ago, and they really were quite impressive. I'm sure that the not to be insulting, but those who did not win, as opposed to losers, those who didn't win also, I'm sure, are quite impressive people.
They were. I mean, Lou, we had, it was the kind of thing where, you know, people just sat around the room and said, I feel like such a slacker after reading all of these. If I could, I just want to share a little bit, you know, just because we learned some things from the winners, but we also went out and did an additional survey to the winners to get a little bit more information and, you know, help paint a picture of, you know, what does this millennial, you know, generation look like in supply chain. Mind you, you know, we're strictly focused on that. But just a couple of things. I mean, on the average age, by the way, I mean, we said was, you know, 30, but it was the average age was 28. And these folks were coming from all sorts of industries. I mean, everything from manufacturing to pharmaceutical to food to energy, education. There was one person that was a municipality, all doing some form of procurement or being in supply chain. But, you know, a couple of themes were running through it. And ML, jump in on any of these. You know, the first one, you know, which and these, by the way, are all bucking the trend or I guess you could say the what we call the negative conception of what a millennial is. But we saw that these folks were, you know, they were really rising stars. They were high energy. They work hard. They play hard. They're giving back through professional and community organizations. I mean, every single one told us that they were doing some kind of volunteer work. And, I mean, it might be volunteer work in a local association, such as ISM or APIX or National Institute of Government Purchasing. But in addition to that, they were doing volunteer work in things like Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Easter Seals, Ronald McDonald, Girl Scouts, Meals on Wheels. I mean, you name it. I mean, I learned about charities I never even thought existed. And just, you know, it was really heartwarming to see that. And also, you know, family and sports, you know, were a big deal with this group. You know, it was, you know, it was kind of nice and heartwarming. We asked these folks, you know, who was your role model? And nearly every person said my mom or my dad.
You know, in reading the bios, I was really impressed, considering the average age was 28-ish. I was really impressed with the titles that some of these people had at these large organizations. I mean, very impressive. I mean, all of them appear to be really rising stars within their own organizations.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, these were folks who are, you know, they love their jobs. I mean, hands down, they told us to. We asked what question. We said, if you could do it all over again at this point, would you still choose supply chain? And everyone said yes. I mean, I'll just share a couple of quotes that I just thought were wonderful. This one gal said, this profession has taught me so much about organizations and how they operate. I truly believe that a strong supply chain distinguishes great companies from good ones and gives that competitive edge that is crucial in today's global economy. You know, and then another person wrote, and this was kind of cute, he wrote, I would absolutely select this profession again. My position is interesting, varied, and shifts with new projects. And in a single day, I can write, present, negotiate, lead projects, and analyze information. And that's before lunch. You know, I mean, how often do you hear that?
Not often.
Yeah,
we're looking. Truly excited. We're looking forward to having a bunch of them on our show and delve into their personalities, their backgrounds, and see if there's some commonality of what's driving these stars that perhaps others don't have. So we may do a kind of a Martian mind suck, see if there's certain characteristics, personality characteristics, and family backgrounds and so on that make these people who they are.
Well, I think there's a lot of...
Go ahead.
I think there's a lot of characteristics with this generation that bring a lot of inherent value to companies. But the companies that are succeeding in working with the millennials are the ones that understand that this group just works differently, and they value those unique characteristics. You know, for example, this group naturally works in a collaborative style and builds communities, skills that are absolutely crucial to success in today's environment. They intuitively build and work with others within virtual teams, and they use technology to stay in tune with the community and the market. They've also had exposure and appreciation of different cultures from a very young age. They're very flexible. They're dedicated to the profession and doing things that have an impact. They want to take the lead. They want to have ownership of a project. They're very, very inspiring.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, ML, I noticed that last week we had Cliff Waldman on the show from MAPI, which is the Manufacturers Alliance for Productivity and Innovation, and he was talking about supply chain. And, you know, I think 20 years ago we thought about supply chain as my company is in Wisconsin and I'm getting supplies from Iowa and Illinois. Today that's not true. A supply chain is a global supply chain, and I know that some of the people who are in the supply chain are excited about it because they get to travel, because the emphasis now is on you need not to check out just your first tier suppliers, but your second and third tier suppliers, no matter where they are.
Yeah.
Now, ML, what's going on with ISM in terms of the future of procurement and supply chain management profession?
So we always make sure that we always try to make sure that we've got a focus and an eye on the future and the upcoming trends and things that we're seeing within supply management, some of the training, some of the changes, and we incorporate that into our trainings and our conferences. We'll be talking a lot about future trends at our annual conference in May in Phoenix. And we do make sure that we're in constant communication with our customers, with at all levels of the organization, so we can get a feel for what's really going on and how things are being implemented, what strategies are working best, just to identify some of those patterns, and then publish our findings through our magazine and blogs.
And by the way, it's ISM's Centennial Conference.
It is. It's going to be a big one. We're celebrating our 100th year at conference, so it'll be a very exciting one to attend.
Well, we hope to be there with you.
That's right.
We would welcome
That's
you.
Right. And you'll have a lot of winners to interview.
Excellent.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, that'll be fun to be able to talk to the people face-to-face.
You're planning on having many of the winners there?
At least 9 of them right now have confirmed, but we've extended a complimentary invitation to all 30. So if they're available time-wise, then they'll be there.
Excellent. We'd love to have them all on the show.
So, ML, what really do these results say about the competition, about the future of procurement and supply chain?
Well, I'd say, Linda and I were actually talking about this, and overall, it just represents a very bright future for the supply chain, and we're excited to be a part of it. The process has been very inspirational. The excitement that these young professionals possess is inspiring for all supply chain practitioners, no matter what level.
Absolutely.
Now, the Megastar, you talked about extending invitations to all of the winners. What do the winners receive, ML?
So in addition to an outstanding amount of recognition, the winners receive free subscriptions to Spend Matters and Inbound Logistics, 1 free year of membership at ISM, and a complimentary registration to our annual conference in Phoenix in May.
Now, how about the Megastar?
So she would receive all of that plus an all-expense-paid trip to ISM 2015, our centennial conference, for her and her nominator, which was Dave Allen with Shell. And we also got to put out there that these nominators were fantastic. It's clear that they're mentors in the field and that they took the time to put together these really fantastic and in-depth nominations was wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Linda, will you and ML, will ThomasNet and ISM hold this competition again?
Absolutely. We're getting ready. We're going to kick it off at the May conference, just like we did last year. And we're going to be coming to you soon for some help to promote that, because we're, with 225 nominations on this one, we're hoping that we'll be getting lots more for the next one.
Great. Now, are there going to be any changes? Will anything be different?
Probably not. You know, we deliberately kept the nomination form very simple. You know, it's got some very direct questions about leadership and specific things that make this person a standout, along with the backup. But we wanted it to be something, you know, feasible that somebody could do, you know, relatively quickly and painlessly, and still be able to get across, you know, what makes that person special.
For any of our listeners, do you have a website where they can go and read some of these bios? Because they really are quite impressive, and I'd like our listeners to be able to avail themselves of that. So if you
Thank
have
you.
The email address, please share it.
Yes, absolutely. Go to www.thomasnet.com/30under30. So it's thomasnet.com/30under30.
And I wish to extend to our listeners that it really would be worth your while to see that there are millennials out there that are really worth their weight in salt, and they're really startling stars, and that you ought to read about them. They're terrific people, and again, we are planning to have several of them on our show in May at the centennial for ISM. I'm sure we're going to be able to interview a bunch of them there. So go listen to it at mfgtalkradio.com. Your URL is thomasnet/30under30.
thomasnet.com/30under30. But I'm sure you have it up there, too, at Manufacturing Talk Radio. So I think either way, you'll be able to get that.
And we certainly look forward to talking to some of these stars and to help you promote it, because it turned out to be a really, truly remarkable program. I know that when you first talked about it and we first talked about it, we were kind of, because it was new, all wondering, you know, what's going to evolve out of this. And then when you read the bios of these people that were selected, and I know there were 225 who probably also had impressive bios, the kind of fresh, young thinking that's taking place with the millennials and the creativity is truly remarkable. I hope it's happening across all industries, not just in the supply chain, because we need it everywhere in this country. But you guys have done a terrific job. We'd like to congratulate you on a job well done.
Well, thank you. It took a village, and we had a fun time. This was great.
I think we want to talk about it next week on our show. And Linda and ML, we want to stay in touch with you to begin to look at how we promote the next segment of this, because I think the 30 Under 30 sequel is going to be equally revealing of what these I call them kids, only because I'm a gray hair guy. I'm in the baby boom generation, so they look like kids to me.
But you're still a baby boomer.
at least
I don't know what came before the baby boomers.
The silent generation.
The silent generation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm part of the silent generation.
And ML knows your history. That's good. ML, just as we kind of wrap up here, I would like you to touch on a little bit more about ISM, and then I'm going to go to Linda and have her do a wrap-up on ThomasNet. But ISM brings a lot of great stuff to the table. So why don't you just kind of hit the high marks of what the ISM Association brings to its members?
Sure. So we're the leading association for supply chain practitioners throughout the world. We have more than 45,000 members and probably triple that in customers. We deliver market intelligence, certification, training, and professional development to the global market of procurement and supply chain management professionals. We also created and we published the PMI Index as part of our monthly report on business. As you know, you just interviewed Brad. And the PMI is closely followed by governments, and in capital markets is a leading indicator of global economic conditions.
And they also published, by the way, the non-manufacturing report on business, which kind of dovetails in with the manufacturing report. If you get those two reports and lay them side by side, and I think Tony Nieves is the chair of that, and his report comes out in maybe 4 or 5 days here. You lay those two reports side by side, and you get a pretty good picture of what's happening in supply chain.
Absolutely.
Linda, what's going on with Thomas Depp these days? Now, for those of you who are not familiar with it, which would be mildly remarkable, but they used to be the Thomas Register Big Green Books. They're now Thomas Net Online. So give us a kind of the high water marks for Thomas Net, Linda.
Happy to. Thomas Net provides solutions that make it easier for buyers, and when I say buyers, procurement, supply chain, and engineers to partner with the right supplier. We've been doing this for well over a century, again, through the Big Green Books, the Thomas Register in the very beginning. It was really considered the indispensable, guide to B2B buyers and manufacturers. And today we're proud to be, ThomasNet.com. I mean, we've been online for quite some time, but ThomasNet.com offers tools to facilitate every step of the buying process. And we start this really through our leading supplier discovery platform, which is free online. Completely free to use at thomasnet.com. There are a number of different applications, everything from supplier discovery to product sourcing for very specific things, to finding CAD drawings, companies that make their 2D and 3D CAD drawings online, a supplier diversity portal that most people may not know about, but that's something that's relatively new. So we've got lots of resources. We also have our secret weapon, I should say, is Kristen Carty, who is our head of audience outreach. And she actually goes out and talks to procurement teams and her colleague Ed Edwards. They speak to engineering teams, procurement teams, and help them to leverage all the free resources. And that's something that we do completely free of charge. And you can find out more if you go to thomasnet.com, and you can see what we do coming online, or arranging for webinars.
Now, I know that when we interviewed you folks out at, I believe it was the ISM show in May in Las Vegas, if memory serves, you were at that time relaunching ThomasNet.com. And one of the things you had incorporated in that was if I have an RFQ and I send it in, I can get a live engineer on the phone to talk about my RFQ to help me source it. Is that right?
It's a service that's called Custom Quotes, and it's available, again, free of charge. So if you're an engineer, you might be somebody in procurement who doesn't, if you're looking to find a supplier and don't know much about, a certain process, let's say it's a particular kind of custom injection molding, you can go to thomasnet.com, click on the Custom Quotes application, put in your requirements, the things that are important to you, and we will actually have an engineer who will work hand-in-hand with you and come back and with recommendations of suppliers that can meet your needs. So it's almost like a hidden procurement specialist that's working for you.
I think I have to have a talk with some of your engineers, particularly about open die forgings and who the right forge shop is that they should be sending your clients to.
Well, there's only one. That's you, Lou.
That's exactly right. Nothing like having a self-serving radio show.
Absolutely. You should be shameless promotion, right?
Right. Well,
and for those of you who don't know, Lou's website address is steelforge.com. That's steelforge.com. You can find a link to it also on mfgtalkradio.com. They are the sponsors of the show. We have been on the air for more than a year now because of the good graces of All Metals and Forge Group that has supported Manufacturing Talk Radio. And, Linda, we would like to thank you and ML Peck for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Pleasure talking with you both again.
Thanks.
Glad we got caught up on this 30 Under 30 program, very exciting program. I encourage everybody to read those bios. Quite remarkable. The only thing that might lead to is people are going to try to poach those people because they're really good. Lou?
I just want to mention that to our listeners that those who did not hear our whole show today, that they can come to mfgtalkradio.com in about an hour and a half, and the show will be up on the website and can re-listen to it. So with that said, ladies, again, thank you for being on our show and sharing your 30 Under 30 information.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
And that's it for Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.